Farside staff. But the scientist narrator was pretty much of a bore, Victor thought, droning on about details of the new telescope. He switched to an entertainment channel from Earth. "And what did these godless scientists bring us?" thundered a florid-faced man in a white suit. "Floods, drought, storms that drowned whole cities. Those were the fruits of the secularists who brought on the greenhouse warming and the bio-wars and all the other horrors of our age. They brought down the wrath of God upon us." The preacher marched back and forth across his stage as he went on. "It was only when the faithful returned to their God, only when the people of this great nation accepted the Lord as their salvation, that some measure of peace and stability returned to the land." Victor flicked through a dozen more channels before stopping at an erotic film. Two women, three men, clad in nothing but glistening perspiration. "I wonder where this is broadcast from," Victor asked himself. "Certainly nowhere in the United States, not with the new morality and control of the media." The scene shifted to a dimly lit Asian temple. Five naked women were making love together. Victor leaned back in his galley chair and thought about moving to the bunk in his compartment. "But then I might miss something," he rationalized. Suddenly a squad of barbarian warriors burst into the temple. The women squealed daintily as the men cast off their furs and weapons and delved into them. "Warning," the ship's intercom blared emotionlessly. "This is a warning from the International Astronautical Authority's Solar Watch. A Force 5 solar flare has erupted in the lower left quadrant of the chromosphere. Radiation from this event will reach lethal levels for all unprotected persons and equipment. Further bulletins will be broadcast as the solar storm develops. Take all necessary precautions and stay tuned for new information as it develops." Switching to the IAA's dedicated information channel, Victor saw that the deadly radiation cloud from the flare would miss Mercury but envelop Venus and Earth within a few hours. "No word yet on how intense it'll be when it reaches the belt," he saw. The cloud of hard radiation belched out by a solar flare was guided through the solar system by the twists and kinks of the interplanetary magnetic field. A cloud that wreaks havoc on Earth's telecommunications might not come within 100 million clicks of Mars even when the two planets were at their closest. Plenty of time to get into the storm cellar, Victor thought, as he switched back to the pornography. I just hope the storm doesn't foul up the signal from Earth.
Without any working antennas, Syracuse was cut off from the storm warning. But the ship's radiation sensors pinged while the family was eating its meager breakfast. They were down to two meals per day, a breakfast of juices and protein bars, and a dinner that Pauline tried to make attractive and nourishing. "Radiation alarm," Theo said, his mouth half filled with the last of his morning's protein bar. "Solar storm?" Angela asked. Theo nodded. "Probably. Might be the precursor wave of high-energy protons and heavier stuff." Pauline said, "We'd better get to the storm cellar then." "Right," said Theo. "I'll go up to the control pod, see what the instruments show, and check out everything. We might have to fly on remote for a few days." Looking at Angela, Pauline said, "You help Theo into a suit." "I won't need a suit," Theo protested. "It's extra protection, and you'd be foolish not to take advantage of it," Pauline said firmly. "I'll check the food stores in the storm cellar. If I recall from the last one, we were almost out of juices there." "I restocked the juices," Angela said, getting up from the galley table. "Good." Theo got to his feet and followed Angela out to the airlock area where the spacesuits were stored. "I really don't need this," he grumbled to his sister once they were out of Pauline's hearing. "Mom's being a tight ass. Don't let her hear you say that. Tight butt, okay?" Angela grinned as Theo sat on the bench in front of the lockers and began tugging on his suit's leggings. "The suit gives you an extra layer of protection against radiation," Angela recited from memory. "It could be the difference between life and death. If we're getting so much radiation that the spittin' suit saves my life, half the equipment still running on this bucket will barf out," Theo said sharply. "You're always such an optimist, Thee."
It'll be 2 days before the storm hits, Victor saw on the wall screen's display. He was exercising on the treadmill in Pleiades' gym, a small, almost claustrophobic metal-walled chamber jammed with equipment that Victor thought of as implements of torture. Necessary torture, though. It would be all too easy to bloat into a boneless slug aboard ship. Exercise was necessary, vitally so. 2 days before the cloud of high-energy protons and electrons smothers this region of space. There's lots of heavier ions in the cloud, too, he saw as he studied the latest IAA bulletin. The ship's magnetic field will deflect most of the crud, but rad levels will still go up in here. I'll have to spend a couple of days in the storm cellar. Communications from Earth had fizzled out once the storm cloud reached the Earth-Moon region. For entertainment, Victor had to fall back on the chips that Sheena Madagascar had stocked in the captain's compartment. The woman had interesting tastes, Victor discovered. He knew from his own experience that Sheena was a vigorous heterosexual, but her assortment of entertainment vids was much, much broader. I'd better bring some of the better ones to the storm cellar with me, he told himself. Not much else to do in there while I'm riding out the storm. Then he remembered that Pauline and the kids would probably be hit by the same cloud of deadly radiation. Syracuse has a storm cellar, he knew. Pauline will make sure they're safe. But how many storms has battered old Syracuse gone through? How many more can the ship take before its vital systems break down?
Like most deep space ships, Syracuse's storm cellar was a tight little compartment lined with thick metal walls that held a heavy liquid mixture that absorbed incoming subatomic particles. After a storm, once it was safe to leave the cellar, the liquid was flushed into the propellant tank for the fusion torch engine. Eventually, the absorbed particles were fired out the engine's thruster. Theo stared worriedly at the wall screen as he sat on the padded bench that ran along the cellar's oval interior. The screen showed the level of absorbent remaining in the supply tank. How does it look? His mother asked. She was sitting beside him. Angela sat across the mini compartment where the food locker stood. Theo thought for a moment before answering. Depends on how intense the storm is, Mom, and how long it lasts. He didn't voice the rest of it. We might get through this storm, but we'll be out of luck if another one hits us. Angela looked concerned, almost frightened. We'll be all right, won't we, Thee? He made himself smile at her. Sure, Angie. We'll be okay. He wished he actually felt that way.
Falker worked hard to keep smiling. Cooped up with the rest of the crew in Vogeltot's minuscule storm cellar was a strain by any measure. And just before the storm's radiation blanked out the ship's communications, there had been that tantalizing blip on the radar screen. A ship, Falker was convinced. It had to be a ship, not a rock. No asteroid gives a profile like that. It wasn't Hunter, the ship they'd been seeking all these past months, but it was a ship. Falker was certain of it. It was running silent for some reason. No tracking beacon, no telemetry coming out of her. All the better. A derelict, most likely. But she was intact, as far as the radar profile could show. All in one piece. Not busted up. It's a ship that we can take and sell back at Ceres for a pretty dollar. Falker couldn't wait for the storm to subside. The smell of the other men crowded into the cellar gave him even more incentive to get out and take that ship, no matter who it belonged to or who might be aboard her.
Selene, Humphrey's Space Systems Headquarters. As the flunky in the conservatively dark suit led them through the warren of cubicles filled with quietly busy HSS employees, Yuan thought that Tamara seemed strangely cool, confident. She wasn't smiling. She hadn't smiled since they'd seen the artifact. But she looked quite calm, almost serene, as if she were looking forward to this meeting with Martin Humphreys. Yuan tried to picture how Humphreys would react when he admitted that he had let Doric Harbin and the old woman go free. Humphreys doesn't like to be disobeyed. This isn't going to be easy, he told himself. Yet Tamara seemed unconcerned, almost at ease. He wondered if she really was that relaxed, or whether it was all an act, a front of bravura that she really